3, 2, 1. This is the Insiders Podcast.
This isn't a very, very exciting industry to be in. You know, if you're very blessed to be able to say that, you know, after being in a band for so long that now my professional life is dedicated to controlled substances, and that, you know, this is something that's been recognized by governments and law enforcement, and finally my family as well.
Today, I speak with Lucas McCann, who's the co-founder and chief science officer of CanDelta. But instead of cannabis, we talked about psychedelic research, the realities of regulation, and perhaps even legalization down the road. I hope you enjoy.
Welcome to the Insiders Podcast.
So when I interview anybody, like anyone else does, I do a little bit of Googling to find out who I'm talking to and where they come from. And when I put your name in, there is a realtor to Vancouver. And then you know how Google will show you pictures of people. There was this long-haired guy. And I was like, well, that's not him. So I'm looking further and further. And then I saw that you ran for provincial elections about 8-9 years ago. And I clicked on that and I was like, oh, that is the long-haired guy. So you've changed your look since then to now.
That's right, man. I mean, once I was university, my philosophy was very much damn the man. Mm. You know, it was very anti-establishment. Yeah, you know, I played in rock bands and very much lived, you know, a different side of the life that I live now.
Okay.
The hair was a testament to that for sure. So, you know, played music and, you know, we all get into cannabis for a reason, right? I spent a long time in university, and that I think was a great way to sort of pay tribute to my rock roots.
Yeah, fair.
Yeah, I had a couple of summers going across Canada in a short bus with a female fronted thrash band, and it was like an ABBA tribute there for a little while that made some good coin, you know, getting between semesters. But yeah, that was definitely me.
Well, you rock the long hair anyway. It's a good look for you. I mean, you're very clean cut now, but I guess that kind of goes with the territory with the type of work that you do. But you know, you had long hair and a tie in your picture too. So you're kind of straddling both worlds, I suppose.
Story of my life. Yeah, for sure. You know, 15 years of university, you know, that was sort of my way to, I guess, have a little bit of a less serious look to me. But yeah, once you start your own business, I think folks sort of are very much based on first impressions, especially when deciding who they're going to choose to work with for starting a new business.
Yeah.
They might get a little bit turned off by someone that looks like they're a little bit more on the party side than anything else.
Fair. Okay. So you've done, you said 15 years of schooling, you've got a PhD, and then you've done a lot of regulatory work, and now you're the chief science officer at a company called CanDelta. Can you tell me exactly what CanDelta does?
Yeah, for sure. So after I finished university, I did a stint at Health Canada working in their health products branch there in the lab. It was great work experience. I really enjoyed it. I had an opportunity to exit there and go into a tech startup for a while, which is fantastic. And then around this time, so much exciting stuff was happening around the cannabis space. I had a friend from York who was actually had left Health Canada, had found a position for me to get involved in there, and she was in the medical cannabis program. Which was awesome. She was the one that was reviewing the applications, doing the inspections. And then she had actually left. And while she had left, we obviously were in contact. She was getting all these emails and messages from folks saying, hey, you left Health Canada. You must know a lot about what's going on with our application, or can you help us with this or this thing? And it seemed like a great opportunity here to perhaps like go into business. And it's like, okay, well, we both have experience in Health Canada. We know what they're looking for and what their expectations are on things. And there's obviously a huge need for folks to be able to tell people what it's like inside of the beast that everyone's trying to understand.
Yeah. At what level are you providing service? Are you dealing with smaller businesses? Are you dealing with large-scale LPs?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, you know, anyone that's looking to start up a new business, we'll work with. But we do also work with folks that are currently licensed. Some are publicly traded and some are on their way to becoming publicly traded, but also like the very small mom and pop cannabis retail store. You know, they'll come to us when they're looking for assistance in getting a license and to open up a new business, or perhaps they've had an inspection that didn't go so well and maybe they're looking for a clear path forward.
Okay. So this industry kind of fell into your lap naturally.
Yeah, it was very synchronous. I always knew that I didn't want to go to school to work in pharma.
Yeah.
So I think people thought I was a bit nuts for doing that, but it was just never something that appealed to me. I just really like to learn. And then this with the regulations, you know, the Cannabis Act coming through Royal Assent and coming into force, it was all synchronicity.
What was your relationship to cannabis growing up?
I mean, my dad was a musician. So, I mean, we always had very open conversations around the table about, you know, that and its use. I was exposed to a lot of the potential applications that could be used for medicinal. I, like many people, know someone that was in our family that had terminal cancer and was using cannabis to self-medicate. And I've had a lot of friends growing up that were very avid users, like every day, several times a day, which I've now learned learned is it was probably them treating something that was perhaps a deficiency or perhaps maybe something else that was going on with their own endocannabinoid system.
Right.
So it's always something that's been around through high school, university, actually even as young as junior high. I mean, that's when I started hearing about friends that were trying drugs and cannabis sort of being grouped into that as well. So I guess I'd say it's a pretty common, but sort of open conversation, I guess, has been how cannabis has been introduced to me.
So we're now more than 2 years upon legalization in Canada. How has your business changed? Was there more work for you guys in the beginning, or is there more work now? Like, what's the model look like these days?
That's a great question. I mean, a lot of the business has to do with creating a name for yourself and making sure that you have some kind of reputation to go with things. There were definitely a lot of people rushing to the space at the beginning, but now it's a lot of maintenance. To be honest, we've been growing a lot. So this company started off as two people, late 2017.
Yeah.
We're about 20 now. So that's a lot of growth in a short amount of time. And we're seeing that there's phones ringing and folks are asking us questions. We're getting a good number of people that are still wanting to start businesses in the cannabis space.
Yeah.
Now in the psychedelic space, too, which is potentially following a very similar path to cannabis, but a lot of folks looking for maintenance support as well. There's a lot of things are changing. The regulations haven't stopped moving. So if you're not paying attention, you're missing something for sure.
Before we get into psychedelics, which is kind of where I want to go anyway, how much work are you guys doing in the States right now? Is there any type of work for a company like yours down there?
There is for sure. The United States has a very fractured system. So going state to state or even moving product state to state is difficult.
Yeah.
It's challenging. So the work we've had in the States has been very piece-wise, it's not nearly as consistent. We've also seen that when folks are looking for someone like a consultant to come in, they typically will shop close to home. So a lot of our business is in the Toronto and Ontario area.
Oh, okay.
We do have clients across the country for sure and across North America, but largely it's folks that I think are looking for folks that are close to them that they can go and visit.
So now you guys are putting your feet in the psychedelics water, which seems to be a pretty popular thing to try out these days. Now, I didn't hear as much about psychedelics research, I would say, until after cannabis legalization federally in Canada, it seemed to become the sort of buzz topic. Are there a lot of companies now that are doing research in psychedelics, and what kind of psychedelics?
So there are. Psychedelics, I think it's always been a point of interest, but now that we've got a sort of a clear path forward for what psychedelics, dare I say, legalization or even regulation could look like, people are starting to pay attention to this now that cannabis, the business of cannabis has been legitimized.
Right.
So psychedelics has been seen as a potential path to help treat folks with the post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD, our Army veterans, folks that have lived through any kind of trauma, folks that might be living with some kind of existentialistic anxiety brought on with by depression, or folks that might be terminally ill. We're now looking at these psychedelics to be able to help, maybe not necessarily resolve, but to help treat some of these folks that are going through palliative care. And it's not just limited to psilocybin, which I think almost gets sort of placed synonymously with psychedelics.
Yeah.
But folks are very curious now about MDMA or ecstasy, ketamine, DMT, dimethyltryptamine.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of these compounds that not only are folks interested in terms of studying, but also in terms of different dosage strengths and how they could affect someone. So not necessarily to the point where you're completely impaired and maybe, on your ass for 8 hours, watching Pink Floyd's The Wall and unable to even get an Uber Eats order through your cell phone because you've lost all sense of ego and technology.
Yeah.
But even dialing that back to just saying, very, very small amounts might help folks to, in their day-to-day, cope with anxiety, but still be able to, for example, go to work and function at a high level.
Well, obviously, the research has to be done. I would think personally that regulation should be put in place. But as a kid who, in my 20s went to raves and did MDMA, I knew of the therapeutic benefits, but I also knew of the downside to doing it too, because you take a large dose, you have a wonderful evening, you feel amazing, but you feel terrible for like a week after. And it might come down to dose. That might be like the magic word in the next decade. But are psychedelics realistic, to be regulated in the next decade? Is that even something that you think is possible?
Anything's possible. So, I mean, to your point about maybe having sort of a bit of a, maybe not necessarily a bad trip, but sort of a bad experience afterwards, I think if we were to regulate psychedelics and to have these compounds, these products prepared or synthesized in environments that were clean, like GMP pharma facilities, all those impurities might be washed out. So maybe that could be some of the stuff that's making you feel bad for a long time.
For sure.
I do definitely think there's some legitimacy here. I'm not the kind of person that, becomes very bullish on something just because it's exciting. I'm a very much an evidence-based person. I like to see numbers to back things up.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of very interesting information that suggests that we could be onto something here. You know, we could be onto something where folks are, for example, taking something like ibogaine that are experiencing, they had some kind of horrible childhood, or something that they saw that deeply affected them. They face that fear, that confrontation in one of these experiences.
Yeah.
And it's almost like they get over it. They snap out of it. They wake up.
Yeah.
And for that could be very, very powerful, because that could be replacing years of therapy. So I mean, my personal opinion is I think there's something here. Mm. I think that we'll see new kinds of treatment that will open up. But I feel like it's so long. It's going to be, in my opinion, probably at least a decade before we get to any kind of regulation that looks like what we have for cannabis here in Canada. Like having, for example, mushrooms be bought at a cannabis retail store, I think that's a long way off.
I would agree with that. And you know, I'm definitely 100% a proponent of the legalization and regulation of a variety of different drugs, not just for recreation, but for the same things you're saying. But I will say that as somebody who's tried a bunch of different things, regulations I think are needed. And a lot of it just comes down to dose and a clean source. Like, and that could be said for any drug. If it was prescribed by a doctor and it was regulated, it would be a safer source. And in many ways, you know, if let's say you have an addiction to heroin and your doctor is giving you a clean source of controlled heroin, the likelihood of you living a more normal life is there. I firmly believe that. But I think also that if you're going to sell magic mushrooms to your regular consumer and there's no regulation at all, you're going to run into problems with people taking too much, I think, or having bad experiences. So that, you know, as much as like real purists, drug proponents say, oh, I don't want regulation. Me personally, I think you need some regulations in place just to keep people safe.
I agree with you. I think under some kind of doctor supervision, there's huge potential. Mm-hmm. There's also huge potential, you know, just like how Spider-Man said, with great power comes great responsibility. You know, these drugs have the potential to be very powerful. They could be extremely impairing. So having someone there to ensure that dosage is being monitored, that someone's not taking too much, because panic reactions can happen if someone takes too much psilocybin-containing mushrooms. They can have a very, very, very bad time for a long time, and there's the potential that they could hurt themselves or others. Or do something to hurt themselves or others, if not physically, then in some other way that they wouldn't appreciate. But you know, there's a lot of important information out there that suggests we could be on a good path. There was a national survey on drug use and health that showed that the use of psychedelic drugs like psilocybin is associated with significantly reduced odds of past month psychological distress, past year suicidal thinking, and past year suicidal planning and attempt. So maybe drugs can stop people from killing themselves because of depression.
Well, I think that speaking about like society in general, the paradigm has to shift wherein if handled correctly, if handled carefully, mindfully, these things can be beneficial for you. And I think, you know, growing up, if you got a bag of mushrooms from some guy on the street, you didn't know what they were, what strain they were, you didn't know how strong they were. And of course, your experience from one day to the next can be totally different. But if you were to go and get something from your doctor that was exactly, I don't know, so many milligrams of psilocybin and it was controlled, and you knew that every time you took one, it was the exact same experience. I think that's where a lot of the benefits can be. Like obviously magic mushroom psilocybin, you know, they can help people repair their minds or deal with PTSD or whatever, like you say. But I think though, again, if there is a control mechanism in place, I can really see the benefits. I'm just not sure that society in general is going to have that paradigm shift anytime soon, because we've been brought up to believe that these things are all terrible for you.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's still the case when we're looking at regulation of cannabis. For instance, you know, we help folks with the retail stores. We get what's called the public notice responses whenever folks are posting a placard on their window where they intend to open up a store. And the responses that come back from the public are like circa 1950s. You would think that, you know, we're driving down the quality of life for everyone around and we're all going to hell. Mm. But we've clearly seen that, you know, the opposite is true, that, you know, we're improving the quality of life for folks in these communities. We're allowing access for people that didn't necessarily realize they needed it because of legalization. Mm-hmm. But we're also restricting access to you, which is important. And then that's, I think, very, very key aspect here. Like, it's got to be goal-driven research we're talking about with psychedelics, not just this should be legal for the sake of getting high. There needs to be some kind of objective in here. And, you know, I think doctors will play a big part of that.
Is there such a thing as black market genetics when it comes to psilocybin? Like, how would laboratories source their psilocybin to begin doing research on?
Yeah, that's great. So, okay, there's a lot of answers to that question. So, okay. You know, there's hundreds of species of psilocybin-containing mushrooms that exist out there. Lots of different kinds of strains or cultivars, if you'll permit me to use that term. Yeah. But it depends on the kind of research that someone's looking to do. If they're looking to do, like, maybe like a formulation or just like a testing, they're looking to have maybe some sort sort of doctor supervised treatment, there's an exemption that you can get from Health Canada, because it is a controlled substance, called a Section 56 exemption, which basically allows you to have access.
Okay.
But if we're talking about clinical trials, if we're talking about folks ingesting this product, or even just cultivating this product or synthesizing this product using yeast is another one that I've heard, or other sort of eukaryotic cells can be genetically modified and fed certain substrate to actually produce psilocybin in very high quantities too. But to do any of that, you would need what's called a dealer's license, NLD. And to do that, you have to have a site that would be GMP compliant, so good manufacturing practices, which mm-hmm. effectively means, drilling it all down, is that you would have to have a site that is basically pharma level of cleanliness,
right,
with folks that know what they're doing, to have an education, SOPs in place, and the products you'd be making would be clean enough for humans. You have to convince Health Canada that the products are clean enough for human consumption. And of course, you would need a vault, like circa, 5 years ago in the cannabis space.
Yeah.
So, amid all that, that would give you the opportunity to either cultivate the psilocybin-containing mushrooms, to process them. Extraction is really big in psilocybin as well. Or to also to cultivate these guys and to prepare these samples for folks that would then be taking them as part of a preclinical or a clinical trial study.
Makes sense. And those are the same standards, I think, that have been applied to the legal cannabis space as well. So, it just keeps consumers, it keeps people safe. End of story.
It does. Yeah. Yeah. Funny enough, there's a big sort of discrepancy. So we work with a lot of pharma companies in the space that are interested in eyeing CBD and eyeing THC. And they'll have these level 9, these level 10 vaults. Like, the only thing that's missing is like an armed guard with a machine gun.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're poured concrete, several levels of access. And then they'll have fentanyl here, which is like $1 million a kilogram. Fentanyl, right? It's super, super toxic to folks. The tiniest amount can hurt folks.
Yeah.
And they would have a cage. We'd be touring the facility. We'd be going through, we're like, there's this cage here. I'm like, well, what is this cage here? I mean, you've got all these opioids. You've got fentanyl over here. You're one atom away from ecstasy and heroin on these things. There's codeine. And that's our cannabis cage.
Oh my God.
So inside their level 9 cage, next to fentanyl, they have under lock and key the cannabis products that they intended, like CBD nonetheless, they intended to store in that vault. So, that was sort of where we were a long time ago, is that, even though it's $10,000 a kilogram for cannabis, next to something that can kill you, a speck of it, smaller than you could even see could kill you, we got the cannabis cage.
Yeah, that's insane. Outside of Canada, who are the world leaders for psychedelic research right now? Who should we be keeping an eye on?
There's a lot of exciting work happening within Canada, but barring Canada, there's some interesting work going on in the U.S., the U.K., Mexico, as well as the Caribbean as well. So I would keep my eye on those locations. We were involved with helping some folks with creating a medical regulatory framework in St. Vincent and the Grenadines, which is in the Caribbean.
Oh, interesting.
So they're trying to put in place this medical framework and these facilities to be able to cultivate and extract psilocybin, which is very exciting. But right now it's anyone's race. I would be surprised if anyone beat Canada in this. But the Caribbean, they could really do it. St. Vincent could do it. They could beat us to do it. It just seems like in Canada we've got a really good framework for how these licenses or these exemptions can be obtained.
Yeah,
kind of like cannabis. I think there's a really good chance for us to be leaders.
That's very cool. I noticed on your website for your company, you guys have an article on the work you're doing in St. Vincent and the Grenadines. So if somebody wants to follow up there, they can go check that out there. Any final thoughts? Anything we missed pertaining to Can Delta and the work that you guys do?
Yeah, wow. I mean, this is a very, very exciting industry to be in. If you're very blessed to be able to say that, after being in a band for so long, that now my professional life is dedicated to controlled substances.
Right.
And that, this is something that's been recognized by governments and law enforcement, and finally my family as well, my extended family. It definitely, leads to some interesting table topics for sure around the dinner table. But no, this is a very exciting industry. I think if anyone has any questions about, the kinds of research that are happening or how they can get involved with these things, I'd implore them to reach out to us and have a conversation. Mm-hmm. I'm always happy to talk to subject matter experts to, sort of see where things are going. But if anyone is sort of curious about how this could potentially work for them and a business they're looking to start, reach out to Can Delta. We'd love to have a conversation.
Nice. Well, I've talked at length about the cannabis space and research and this and that. And when I saw psychedelics on your website, I was like, I think I'm going to take you over there, because I feel like sometimes when I talk talk cannabis with people who are beating a dead horse. And it's fascinating to hear about some of the work being done with psychedelics. And I don't know that much about that work. So maybe I ask some pretty entry-level questions, but I think there are a lot of people out there that are like me and they're curious about that type of work that you guys do. So thanks for talking about that.
No, it's my pleasure. This is a new and exciting area. There are no dumb questions. I mean, this is very, very new stuff. The cutting, bleeding edge of regulated work is in the psychedelic space. We're launching our sort of sister wholly owned sub called Psi Delta, which we felt was an appropriate response to, you know, the psychedelic stuff in its spinoff of Can Delta as well. So we've got our Psi Delta up. So if you're curious about the kinds of license you can obtain in Canada or elsewhere, visit PsiDelta.com.
Cool. Well, thanks for doing this, Lucas.
Hey, my pleasure, man. It's great talking with you.
Thanks so much to Lucas for taking the time to talk to us about psychedelic research. You can find Can Delta and Psi Delta online. And of course, if you want to see what Lucas looked like with long hair, just Google him. Trust me, it's well worth the look. And hey, if you like what I do, make sure you subscribe to the podcast and leave me a review. Follow me on Twitter @_insiderspod or email me, michael@distinctmedia.ca. Thanks so much.
Thank you for listening to the Insiders Podcast. We do our very best to be as accurate as possible, but take no responsibility for inaccurate details or facts. If a topic interests you, we're happy to have brought it to your attention, but please take the time to research the details for yourself. To find out more about Insiders Podcast and all of the work that we do, check out distinctmedia.ca.